You're listening to talkingtrading.com.au. Share market expert interviews to fuel your profits, squash your fears, and drive you towards exceptional trading habits. It'll help you make the right decisions about what, when, and where to trade. Tune in anywhere, anytime. Now, let's get on with the show with Caroline Stephen.
Hello and welcome to another show. I'm Caroline Stephen. It's great to have your company. Are you freaking fed up with feeling anxious? Psychologist and life coach Simone Miller joins us today to give us some fantastic advice on how to beat the nerves once and for all. To get your stress levels down, there's no need to resort to hitting the bottle or biting your nails. Instead, Simone gives us some very practical strategies on how to deal with anxiety. A very insightful discussion with lots of handy tips. And continuing on from our interview with Evan McGuire last week, we have more insights for you into the wonderful world of options. Louise Bedford, the author of The Secret of Writing Options, picks up where Evan left off and continues with these trading dynamos, albeit with plenty of warning. These leveraged instruments are as risky as they are rewarding, and Louise tells us just how to handle them. But first up, here's an update of the week's news with Chris Tate.
And now, Market Matters with Chris Tate.
So what has been happening in the Aussie market this week, Chris?
Well, the big news is the Dow trying not to fall out of bed and land on everybody. Friday night was a bit of a shocker for the Dow, down some nearly 2%, and it was what you'd call a 90-90 day. Now, a 90-90 day is where 90% of the volume is on the downside and 90% of the price moves on the downside. So we've actually spent the past two or three days catching up with that. But the Americans are actually trying quite hard to bounce. But the thing to do is to look at it really in context. One of the problems with daily moves is that they're so noisy. There's so much rubbish going on that you tend to lose sight of what's actually happening. And if you look at the Dow or any of the US indices on a weekly chart, they're still up around their all-time highs and they're still trending up. Conversely, we're still struggling to get out of congestion. We really are sort of a little bit moribund here in the Australian market, which does actually make it difficult for people who are stuck trying just to trade Aussie stocks. And it's probably not helped by our dollar drifting down against the major currency.
So how much has the Dow dropping impacted the Aussie markets?
We fall sort of in suit. It's the old thing. The Dow sneezes, everybody catches a cold. And we're in the process of catching a cold. So our first few days after Australia Day were ordinary, but we're actually up today, in line with the Dow being up 90 overnight. And the problem we face is that normally when you get some sort of panic in the US, it filters through to things like gold.
Okay, so how has gold gone this week?
Not at all. It's really just stuck. This is one of the great problems we face. Interestingly, when I wake up to the Dow having fallen out of bed, the first thing I look at is the price of gold, because the sort of strategy you would adopt for that is that people still, there is some flight to gold still when you have these moments of panic. Gold barely moved.
What sectors have been travelling well the last week?
Virtually none. We're very moribund. There's nothing that really stands out as a stellar performer.
What have been the cold sectors?
I think it would probably be better stated if which were the lukewarm ones and which were still the lukewarm ones. Because we're not getting any energy in the Australian market. So nothing's really hot, nothing's really cold. Everybody's sitting on their hands waiting for something. So it's really the equivalent of saying, well, warm is 30 degrees and cold is 29. So we're not getting that. There's no energy in the market at present whatsoever locally.
Okay, so how can traders use your information to help their trading?
Okay, let's say I was a novice trader and I was looking at a cascade of events. I would be looking at things like the Dow slipping, which would cause our market to slip. But conversely, if that was occurring, you would look to see a flight to assets that might protect them. So you'd be looking at gold, which means you'd be looking at gold stocks if gold took off. The same is true in some respects for currencies, because there does tend to be a flight away from the US dollar when these things occur. So I'd be, in sort of order of consequence, I'd be looking at the Dow, the local market. I'd be looking at gold and the precious metals and seeing if anything was happening there, if there's sort of flight into those markets. And then I'd be looking to see what was happening with the US dollar to see if people were starting to get nervous about that as well. So that's sort of the order of business that I'd undertake.
Thanks, Chris, for giving us a skinny on the news this week. Thanks for your time.
Not a problem, mate.
You've been listening to Market Matters with Chris Tate on talkingtrading.com.au. And now, Psychology Secrets with Simone Miller.
Are you freaking fed up with feeling anxious? Are you entertaining too many negative thoughts between your ears and losing sleep? Well, rest assured, you're not alone. Anxiety is a prevalent condition which is on the rise in today's high-pressure society. Simone Miller is a psychologist, life coach and colleague of Louise Bedford, the creator of tradinggame.com.au. And Simone now joins us to give us a better understanding of what anxiety is and how to manage it. Hi, Simone.
How are you, Caroline?
Very well, thanks.
Good.
Simone, how can anxiety best be described?
Anxiety can be understood to be an unpleasant emotional state, really, consisting of both physical symptoms caused by our thoughts and feelings, which are responses to anticipation of imagined or non-existent threats or danger. Anxiety is also an emotional experience, which I'll run through a little bit more later. It's actually the body's natural response to danger. It's an automatic alarm that goes off whenever we feel threatened, under pressure, or are facing stressful situations.
I guess the thing is to feel anxiety when the situation's real and not imagined. What do you think?
Absolutely. We are actually hardwired to have anxiety. It's our alarm system. It's our protective mechanism, basically. If we see a semi-trailer coming for us and we feel our heart start to pump really hard and adrenaline start to pump through our body, which is what anxiety ultimately feels like, that's in actual fact quite functional because it saves our lives.
That's good fight and flight.
Absolutely. So, in fact, in moderation, anxiety isn't always a bad thing. It can really help us stay alert and focused. It can spur us into action and it can motivate us to solve problems. But when anxiety is constant or overwhelming, or when it interferes with relationships or activities, it stops being functional. And that's where we might consider employing some strategies which we'll discuss more about shortly.
Before we jump into the strategies, I'd like to ask you, what are some of the common signs or symptoms of anxiety?
Great question. Look, I like to break that conversation up really into two sets of answers. My experience is that symptoms are either emotional or physical. So some of the emotional experiences people report are feelings of apprehension or dread, irritability, trouble concentrating, might feel tense or jumpy, again, feeling restless with the tense and jumpy. We tend to be hypervigilant, watching for signs of danger. We often anticipate the worst and often at times even feel like our mind has gone blank. Some of the physical symptoms that we might notice is, like I mentioned, a pounding heart, and that's caused by a release, a big surge of adrenaline, which actually gives us a whole heap of energy. But it also results in potential tremors and twitches, sweating, muscle tension, stomach upset or dizziness, headaches, frequent urination or diarrhea, fatigue, insomnia, and shortness of breath. So they're all things that people need to look out for.
It's just amazing how long the lists are.
And that was a shortened list, believe you me. So each individual obviously has their own experiences of it and very much manifest in the physical being.
Okay, so let's talk about some strategies now. How can we start to manage some of these emotional and physical symptoms of anxiety?
Well, there's lots of different ways. There's some, I suppose, more precise practical strategies which you can do in any given moment of feeling anxious. But what I actually really encourage people to do is have a little bit of a reflection on their lifestyle, have a bit of a think about, you know, some critical questions. And those questions might include, do I make time each day for relaxation and fun? Am I getting the emotional support I need? Am I taking good care of my body? Am I overloaded with responsibilities? And do I ask for help when I need it? Something really worth considering is if your stress levels are through the roof, think about how you can bring your life back into balance. There may be responsibilities you can give up, turn down, or delegate to others. If you're feeling isolated or unsupported, find someone you trust to confide in. Just talking about your worries can make a huge difference and make them seem less frightening.
It's so true, isn't it? When you've got social support, you feel much less anxious about what's going on in your life.
Absolutely. You get validated, I think. People in your life often act as supportive mirrors with nods of the head and validation and affirmation. And we need to remember, ultimately, humans are pack animals. We are designed to live amongst others, and we use those social relationships to maintain a sense of balance. So they really are very important.
And let's just go into the relaxation and fun point that you brought up.
Sure.
What's something, let's say, that you do for relaxation or fun to unwind?
Geez, some people might absolutely go, this woman's bananas, but I actually love to exercise. That really is a big part of my strategies of staying balanced, and that can incorporate relaxation and fun, whether it's a yoga component or a moving meditation such as running. And fun, even having a play in the garden with a hose can be great. Connecting with your inner child, having a laugh at a silly joke, any of those things can be fantastic. And I suggest that each person finds what works for them and be willing to be silly. I think that's a really good way to go as well.
Connecting to your inner child and just being silly and letting go.
Absolutely, absolutely. If you can even manage it, play with some kids.
Yeah.
Get in a game with them, do some creative play or make up a war scenario, have a run around the garden. Makes a big difference.
All right, let's talk about some more practical strategies that people can use if they are feeling anxious.
Sure. Look, one thing to note about practical strategies, there's obviously many people can choose from. All anyone has to do is search the internet to find a whole raft available. But what we tend to find is, like anything in life, the more you practice them, the better you get at them, and absolutely the more effective they become. And what I would also suggest is don't wait until you're in the midst of anxiety to practice these things. When we're actually calm and things feel okay or in a positive mood, that's a great time to try something new, whether it's a meditation or a breathing technique or an affirmation. One of the strategies I really do like is challenging those negative thoughts. And there's a bit of a process that you can go through, and there's a number of ways you can do it. The first one is you can write down your worries. So keep a pad and pencil on you, type them on a laptop, smartphone or tablet, and when you experience your anxieties, write them down.
That's such a good idea, because you have so many negative thoughts running around in your head, you don't even realise it.
Absolutely. And writing them down is actually harder work than simply thinking them. Uh-huh. So your negative thoughts are likely to actually disappear earlier if you try that strategy.
When they're written down, what do you do with them?
There's a number of things you can do. You mentioned quite rightly earlier, Caroline, that sometimes anxiety is based on real situations. So I think one of the things you can do is ask yourself, is there something I need to do to act on this? Is this a real fear about something existing in my life? Do I need to undertake some problem-solving activities or ask somebody for some help with them? I suppose if the answer is no, this isn't actually a real fear, it's not something I need to do something about, you could either challenge that thought or feeling and say, well, why might I be feeling that? Am I concerned about something else? Or you might also consider undertaking a relaxation technique in acknowledging that the risk or threat is not real. I just need to support myself to relax and maybe use an affirmation and remind myself that I'm actually okay.
Oh, lovely. That's such beautiful advice.
Thank you.
I used to have a friend who was a psychologist, and he always said that writing your worries down provided a witness to your feelings and validated what you were feeling.
It almost is a supplement to, you know, we talked about the role of social connectedness and having others to support you if you can talk to them. I guess this is a great strategy. If you're not around a group of people that you can trust with that conversation, say you're in a workplace or something and it's quite a private anxiety that you're experiencing, even jotting them down, having a look at them can actually supplement that social validation that you might get from others.
All right. What's another strategy?
Great. I like to also say anxiety in limited numbers, in limited quantities, is not necessarily a bad thing. So how about choosing one or two 10-minute what I call worry periods, in inverted commas, each day, time that you can actually devote to the anxiety. During your worry period, it sounds crazy, during your worry period, focus only on negative anxious thoughts without trying to actually correct them.
So don't hit the bottle of gin and don't bite all your nails. Just let the worries come.
Absolutely. Because often we spend so much time fighting them and resisting them, and that's the whole time that we're awake during the day, that we get quite burnt out. We don't actually ever invite them or create a space for them. So this is almost going counterintuitive. And the rest of the day, however, and this is the condition attached, is to be designated free of anxiety. And when anxious thoughts might come into your mind or pop into your head during that day, write them down and postpone them to your worry period. So capture them on paper and then make an agreement with yourself, hey, I've documented it, I've got it, I'm going to look at that later during my 10-minute worry period. And that gives you permission to kind of move on and concentrate on other things that might need your attention.
Fabulous. Any more strategies?
Yeah, look, one other that I suppose I would put into the category of challenging those negative thoughts is accepting uncertainty. So within that, I would say, unfortunately, worrying about all the things that could go wrong doesn't make life any more predictable. It only keeps you from enjoying the good things that happen while you're in that moment. So learning to accept uncertainty and not require immediate solution to life's problems can often be very freeing for people.
It's all about feeling free.
Absolutely. And look, in saying all of that, what I suppose I've spoken about, they're quite cognitive, they're quite mind-focused in terms of techniques. There's some really great strategies just around relaxation techniques. So these are more let's focus on the biological, let's focus on the physical, the mind-body relationship. And when practiced regularly, things such as relaxation techniques such as mindfulness, meditation, progressive muscle relaxation, deep breathing, they can reduce anxiety symptoms and increase feelings of relaxation and emotional well-being. And in fact, they actually slow down that fight or flight response that you talked about earlier. So it's really about what we call the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems. So it's actually saying we're not in front of a truck. We don't have to run out of the way. We don't have to fight the caveman who's coming with the club to bash us. Let's try and slow down our heart rate. Let's try and calm our bodies. Let's try and get back to a bit of equilibrium again.
Okay, and I'm just assuming that healthy eating habits, regular exercise and enough sleep are just fundamentals?
Absolutely. Our sleep-wake cycles, exposure to sunlight, there's actually what we call anti-anxiety foods. So things like tomatoes and things with good antioxidants, things that balance electrolytes, things that maintain a steady blood sugar, they're all really critical to feeling okay.
Simone, we'll have to wrap it up there today. Thanks so much for your insights about anxiety. Really enjoyed talking with you.
Lovely. Thanks for the opportunity, Caroline.
Simone Miller, life coach and psychologist there.
You've been listening to Psychology Secrets with Simone Miller on talkingtrading.com.au.
Want to know how Malcolm Bish, a member of the 2012 Trading Game Mentor Program, beat 10,000 other traders to win the ASX share market game? Then you need to grab his special report. If you're serious about your trading future, this is a must-have resource. It's only $19.95 and available from tradinggame.com.au. Pick up your copy today. Novices tend to overestimate the returns that they can derive from the share market and yet underestimate the amount of effort that becoming a successful trader requires. Often influenced by a slick sales pitch, many naive hopefuls begin trading options prematurely and much to their detriment. Continuing on from Evan Maguire's interview last week is Louise Bedford, the author of The Secret of Writing Options. Louise joins us now to give us some great advice on how to safely trade these dynamos. Louise, hello and welcome.
Hi, Caroline.
So what are the four basic option strategies?
Sure. Look, when I got started trading options, I got extremely confused as to what was what. It's a very big area to be able to learn. Now, my business partner has Chris Tate, who I know that you do know. He's actually told our mentorees, the people involved in our mentor program, that you can either buy a call or you can write a call. You can buy a put or write a put. Now, even if you don't know what those actually mean, they are the four strategies that you can research, and it will really be able to help you define and narrow down all of the guff that is out there about options if you know what the end result will be.
The guff about options, I like it. How would you make a decision to buy or to write options?
That is a really good question, because if the share is going up and it's an optionable share and it's one that has good liquidity, and personally I like it to be in the list of the top 20 options traded by volume for the past three consecutive months, if it's got all of that and it's going up, there are two things that you can do. You can either buy a call because you're wanting to profit as the share price goes up, or you can write a put. Now, both of those things will bring you money, because if you're trading in direction of the trend and everything else from the option is set up the way that you want, like volatility and the time to the actual expiry date, they will be the two profitable things you can do. Now, one of the things that you can do is work out what you think the strength of the move will be. If you think that thing is going to skyrocket up, then you would buy a call, because when you're writing a put, your premium is actually limited and you will never get more than the actual premium that you will have received when you're actually taking that trade. Whereas if you buy a call, it's likely to keep on going up and up and up, up until you have to exit because of your stop or expiry has been hit. Now, if I have just spoken a whole lot of foreign words there to you, hopefully that will give you a little bit of curiosity about the options market, to know that you don't have to just buy a share to make money out of a share that's going up. There are derivatives that you can use, and there are ways to really maximize your leverage with that item as well.
What are some of the things that could possibly go wrong with using some of these derivatives?
Oh, because I've just mentioned that big ugly word leverage, people go, wow, I can make so much money. But actually, you can also lose quite a bit of money too. One of the difficulties with options is the word contingent liability. And what that means is that if you have written an option, you have unlimited risk. So technically, that thing can keep on going and going and going, and you can be required to produce more and more money to be able to fund that position. Now, that's an awful position to be in for you, because clearly, you know, if you're freaking out about, oh my gosh, my stop loss has been hit in a share, and you're not used to exiting, if that happens in an option and you're facing contingent liability, that's really two big ugly words, contingent liability. So I think that probably that's one of the major things. The other thing is that people underestimate the role of volatility and the role of time decay in an option trade.
Mm. How should a trader get started with trading options?
Very, very slowly. Start with one contract. buy a call and then buy one put. All right, so one option contract will cover around about 100 shares to give you a bit of an idea. So just do one contract, then write one call and then write one put and monitor it every day, preferably two or three times a day if you've got some time to be able to do that. See what happens when the share price goes up. Does my call option price go up or does it go down? And get your taste for it. Get into the arena and start really, really small. And then by the time you're ready to ramp up, you'll have some great experience under your belt.
And by the time you are ready to ramp and, let's say, launch, what's a good next step for somebody?
Find a broker that you can trust, that you can talk over some of these concepts with. Now, one of the people that we just adore and trust is Evan McGuire from BBY. He's an options broker and he has helped a lot of our traders just start small and then work their way up. So I think that's a really good next step. Make sure that you read as well, like my book, The Secret of Writing Options, is ideal for this, and Chris Tate's book on options as well. Perfect for you to be able to get an entree into the options market and make sure that you've got all of the basics and the jargon right before you even put on your very first trade.
Thanks, Louise. That's Louise Bedford, the author of The Secret of Writing Options.
It's a pleasure.
That's all we have for you today. I'd like to thank our contributors, Simone Miller and Louise Bedford. Tune in next week to find out what is rich and how to make it a universal number that suits everyone. I'm Caroline Stephen, and on behalf of the team, thanks for joining us. See you next time.
Talking Trading is sponsored by tradinggame.com.au and The Mentor Program. The Mentor Program has been running continuously since the year 2000 and is a 6-month repeat-for-free course run by Chris Tate and Louise Bedford. In the Mentor Program, you'll learn every trading instrument over every time frame, but trade your own customised trading plan. The results of the traders who have completed the Mentor Program are astounding. Make sure you're registered on tradinggame.com.au to hear more.
The views represented on Talking Trading are general in nature and do not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Before acting on any information, consider its appropriateness in regard to your own situation.